Hey friends, I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm the host of the new podcast, Commotion. If you don't know about us yet, well, we are your daily deep dive into the biggest stories coming out of the world of pop culture, art, and entertainment. And luckily, I'm not going to be doing it alone, okay? I'll be joined by some brilliant culture writers and thoughtful superfans. We're going to have hilarious hot takes. We're going to have vibrant debates. Consider this your invitation to join the group chat. Get in here and join us. Commotion, available weekdays on CBC Listen.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
And we have got to talk about Alberta, Rosie, because the province continues to grapple with a COVID crisis in their healthcare system. Meanwhile, Premier Jason Kenney continues to face backlash from all sides, even from within his own caucus. We're still in this fourth wave, but other premiers and other leaders are not facing the same kind of crisis. So how did Alberta get here?
Good question. I also want to talk about what this parliament is going to look like going forward. We got some hints from the Prime Minister this week. He spoke to reporters at length for the first time about the things that he thinks are going to be important. The first things on his agenda, if you will. This podcast is also dropping on the very first National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. So how does reconciliation fit into his potential legacy? Lots to talk about there too.
Well, then let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Okay, a quick heads up before we get too far is that the episode you're listening to is going to be our last one for a while.
What?
And I know. Listen, I hope that you knew that. I hope that you were informed of this.
I did.
And we'll talk about more about that at the end, but we just didn't want people to miss it, so we just kind of put it right at the front, just so you know. We're going to come back to this. We'll discuss it a little bit more at the end.
Okay.
So I don't think there's actually a good place to start, because the situation in Alberta is just really rough. But I think it might be most useful to start with this piece that the CBC ran a few days ago that had this startling statistic. Around half of Canada's new COVID cases over this past weekend came from Alberta, and the province contains 10% of Canada's population. Like, that is staggering. That is a staggering number, and I think it kind of distills succinctly just how bad things are in Alberta right now. Albertans are dying of COVID-19 at three times the average Canadian rate. There's been plenty of reporting on how doctors are getting briefed and how they should decide the people who should get that life-saving care. And, you know, honestly, like, when I think about the journalists I'm following in Alberta, they are running out of ways to say that the healthcare system is on the brink, because it's, like, well and truly past that point. And that's context to talk about Jason Kenney, because all of this comes as there's a lot of pressure on Jason Kenney to do something. And this is a premier who before has declared that Alberta is ready and open. He had that big open for summer photo op. He's resisted vaccine passports before. He's resisted all kinds of restrictions. And then he's kind of found himself backtracking on all of those things. And I guess where I want to start, Rosie, is now that people are calling for this big shutdown in Alberta to avoid things getting even worse, he's resisting that. And he's turned down help from Newfoundland. And maybe as a table setter, we should talk about, like, who is Jason Kenney listening to? Who are the interests that he's trying to balance here?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. He's trying to balance probably too many interests at this stage. And that's why now he has so many people calling for a fire break, which, as you say, this week he said he will not do, because he wants to see how the restrictions they announced about a week and a half ago play out. On Tuesday, actually, he talked about, you know, adding further restrictions and why that might not make sense right now.
We are monitoring the trends and the numbers very closely every day. If we need to take additional measures, we will, but they have to be effective. The pressure on our hospitals is coming overwhelmingly from the unvaccinated share of our population. That's now down to about 17% of adult Albertans. And we also find that that segment of the population are the least likely to comply with public health measures or restrictions, including basic things like self-isolation or testing. It is a complex situation, because if we were to bring in widespread restrictions that would most likely be complied with the people who are vaccinated, but we would likely see large-scale non-compliance among the unvaccinated population. Wouldn't get as much further ahead.
I think originally when Jason Kenney approached the pandemic, he was like any premier, right, trying to find the right balance between public health measures and the economy. And we saw plenty of premiers sort of struggle with that balance, go too fast, go too slow. I think that that was something we became accustomed to. What I don't think we saw really anywhere else, with the exception maybe of the Atlantic provinces, were doing their own kind of bubble thing, was a province where the premier so brazenly, as you said, declared all the public health measures to be lifted and declared that his province was open for business again. There was no indication from anyone that that was the right thing to do from a public health perspective. But from a political perspective, it was clear that Jason Kenney was trying to speak to the Albertans who believe in freedom, who believe in business, who believe in being able to make their own decisions and choice, and that he felt he could do all those things, that he could allow those Albertans, the people who vote for him primarily, to have those choices at a time when, frankly, probably individual choice was not what should have been the first thing on the table.
Well, here's what I find gripping about all of this is that Kenny's not exactly alone in all of this balancing act. Like, Doug Ford in Ontario was resistant to lots of shutdowns over the pandemic. He was resistant to vaccine passports. Alberta's not even the least vaccinated province. Like, that distinction goes to Saskatchewan, where Scott Moe has had to deal with COVID numbers that are honestly pretty horrific. But the thing is, Ford read the political tea leaves and saw that, you know, no matter how ideologically opposed to the idea of vaccine passports he is, the policy had these staggeringly high approval ratings. And so he eventually went where people are. Mm-hmm. Scott Moe doesn't seem to have such a divide in his caucus where, you know, every week he's putting out fires about whether, you know, parts of his caucus disagree with him or not. Whatever problems they might have with him, they are keeping it in-house. But that's not Kenny's situation, right? Like, part of his caucus is saying no restrictions, and the other part is saying actually more restrictions. And it leaves Jason Kenney with nowhere particularly coherent to run. Like, and the trouble might be that at the start, he spent so much time acknowledging that ideology is going to guide his response. Like, he had that whole, you know, Alberta respects freedom more than other places kind of bend. But it may have added to a result where he's kind of hemmed himself into a response that's guided by that. And now a situation has come up where it requires a different kind of response.
Yeah, and he essentially has no one happy with him now. As you say, he's survived for now a revolt inside his own caucus, although we still see it bubbling along. So we'll see how much people feel free to speak out against him. But he also has angered the Albertans who felt that he didn't do his job as premier and didn't protect them. It's kind of remarkable that he's managed to anger virtually everybody on every side of this debate. And it's also fascinating to me because Jason Kenney this is not a new politician, right? This is a seasoned, seasoned conservative politician who was a federal cabinet minister for many, many years, was, you know, central to Stephen Harper's government, is an extremely smart and strategic thinker, went back to Alberta to try and unite the right, which he did, and lead his province, and has been, I would say, politically crippled by this pandemic, almost unable to make the decisions that are needed to show leadership. I have this one doctor that I have on my TV show regularly, Neeja Bakshi, Dr. Bakshi, and she's in Edmonton. And every time she comes on, she's been on maybe three times, she is just more and more tired looking, you know, just like exhausted. Yeah. And I was looking at her Twitter over the past day, and at the end of it, she actually posted a picture of her face and how defeated she is. That's what she says. And she also says, and this is, I'm just quoting her here, she says, you know, that they want to be able to provide standards of care to their patients. And she says, right now, we can't do that because Jason Kenney puts self-preservation over the health and well-being of this province. Now, you know, that's a doctor speaking to a premier, sort of begging for help. I'm not sure that that's Jason Kenney's motivation, but it is certainly the feeling out there that he is more worried about his political survival than the survival of the healthcare system in Alberta.
Well, let me just add one more thought here, which is that, you know, it really feels like, at least when it comes to the governments, all governments of all stripes, this whole pandemic has kind of been about the question of learning, like about looking at other places that are further along, you know, down a certain path or plan and seeing how it worked out for them and deciding whether that's what you want. And I think it's actually honestly been that way since basically day one, like since we were watching those shocking videos in Italy and thinking, well, that's there and that's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
And we are now, you know, a year and a half into this thing. It is fair that people, I think, demand of their politicians some kind of proof that they're paying attention to other places and not just going on a hope that things will somehow work out differently for you, because they won't. And that has happened repeatedly, whether the first wave or the fourth wave. It's been, you know, you watch what happens in other places and then you say, we are along the same path, and those numbers, like the math has not lied at all, all pandemic. I don't know why you think it would start lying now. And I will say that the pandemic is certainly the most heightened era of government watching in my life. Like, people are paying attention to these moves that politicians make. And it's so odd to see politicians make these inexplicable moves, because, like, this stretch has taught us over and over again that at some point you will be called upon to explain why you did what you did when you did it. And, like, hopefully you have a good answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what is unusual about Jason Kenney is that he didn't or he hasn't changed his response as rapidly as other premiers. You mentioned Doug Ford. I mean, I think that was what happened to Doug Ford, right? Like, as you said, like, he was going in one direction. He listened to the various people putting pressure on him. He changed course. And for that reason, we are not having a fourth wave in Ontario like you see in Alberta. But it's fascinating to me that Jason Kenney doesn't seem to be listening to that. I mean, yes, he's got restrictions in place now, but it's frankly probably a month too late to save some people's lives. The healthcare system is at capacity, over capacity, even though they keep adding ICU beds. I think it's at 85% capacity, even with the additional beds. They've had to delay surgeries if they are not life-threatening. They've had to delay organ transplants in the province if it is not an emergency. I mean, these decisions are going to have ramifications for months and months and months, because the healthcare system will take so long to get it back up and you know, running even slightly like what it was before. So I guess that's the part that I find perplexing. Why Jason Kenney took so long to act? What was it that held him back? Was it, as you said, like a desire to stick to the ideology that was guiding him? Or was it a desire to lead in a different way in spite of what all the data and all the science was telling him?
Maybe one thing that Jason Kenney is thinking about is, you know, how long people's political memory might be, because he's not facing a really big test anyway in the polls until the spring of 2023. That is a long ways away in terms of when the next election in Alberta is going to be. And I'm not sure how, you know, how memorable the fall of 2021 is going to be by then. And maybe that is something that's factoring into his decisions.
I'm Jonathan Goldstein, host of Wiretap. Each week you're invited to listen in on my telephone conversations, whether funny, sad, wistful, or even slightly strange. You never know just what you might hear on Wiretap.
I mean, I knew you had a show. I just didn't think that people actually listened to it.
Howard,
that's the breadth of your genius, Jonathan. It's not just that you're funny, but you can be cripplingly, poignantly depressing.
The Wiretap Archives, available on CBC Listen, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, a lot has happened since the election, as it turns out. Like, I don't even think the election was the most important story this month in the end.
No, not at all. It's like maybe fourth.
Yeah, like maybe. Top 10. In spite of all that, Justin Trudeau did emerge to take some questions at length from reporters, because he did come out very late last Friday, of course, when we found out that Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor were being released from China and were on their way home. But this was his first time speaking to reporters since the election at length about sort of the results of the election, his mandate, and how he plans to move forward. And this is what he had to say about how he took those results.
The discussions that we had during this election campaign were significant on very big things. We put forward a plan to go even faster and harder and deeper on fighting against climate change, to do even more on reconciliation, to do even more on supporting families, whether it's seniors or young families with childcare or countering the housing crisis. And Canadians were very clear that they want those progressive, big, bold ideas to be delivered by their parliament and by their government. And that's exactly what we're going to work on.
So as you heard there, he mentions some of the things that have always been a priority for him: climate change, reconciliation, childcare certainly is one of the deals that's going to move ahead very quickly. But what I found fascinating about his comment there was that, yes, he recognizes he got a minority government that isn't substantively different than the last one, but that he actually sees the results of the election as encouragement or validation that his government is on the right path, and that the things that he is committed to, he can now, I don't know if go aggressively after, but isn't going to hesitate in pushing those parts of his agenda. And I don't know if that's the message that I would have taken from that election, but I find it interesting that that is what he takes from it.
I mean, certainly when I get like a C plus from my teachers, I take that as a message saying, you know what, you should try harder. That is, that's generally how I receive these things. Listen, okay, I have had a lot of thoughts listening to that clip,
yeah,
and listening to him on that day that he came out, which is, let's start here. The day that people are listening to this episode, it's the first National Day of Truth and Reconciliation.
Yep.
And we heard that phrase there that he used the whole election period, which is, there's even more to do on reconciliation. And it's a really short line that I think maybe doesn't really reflect an understanding of the enormity of the job left. Like, again, to run quickly through the numbers, like the CBC's Beyond 94 project, they've compiled that out of 94 calls to action, 13 are complete. And it gets a little generous when you consider that, like, there's another 29 that are in progress. You know, they have their status as projects underway, but 20 of them haven't even begun yet. And like, some of them are pretty big ones, like adopt legal principles on Aboriginal title claims. That sounds like a pretty big one. And listen, it's like probably unrealistic to expect a single government to do all of it.
Yeah.
But if this minority government lasts the average amount of time that minorities last, Trudeau will have been PM for about 8 years. And like, with that long in power, you are starting to think about legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Harper governed for about 9 years, Chrétien for about 10 years, Mulroney about 8 years. And like, between now and the next election, Trudeau has probably, hopefully, ended the pandemic, or it has the end of the pandemic
God,
to manage.
I hope so.
Maybe. I sure hope so. But I think he's also presumably thinking about like what history books will say about him.
Yep.
And Canada Child Benefit, yes. Management of global pandemic, sure. But this isn't, you know, this, he's not going to be one of those forgotten prime ministers. We're not dealing with like a Sir John Abbott situation here. Sorry to my Abbott heads. But
I couldn't name one thing Abbott did. Could not,
yeah,
do it. Yeah.
Neither can I.
Okay.
Win a majority one time. But anyway, no, that's the point. But I will say that like, there are things that he's also starting to think about in terms of what his, yep, other priorities are. So,
yep,
like things like the environment, things like this growing housing crisis. And I just wonder how you begin to orient yourself, mm-hmm, when you know that there are things to do now.
Yep.
But also there are things that you got to get done in terms of leaving a legacy of some sort.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really something they're probably thinking a lot about. I should say that when the Prime Minister was asked, he was asked two things, too, at that same press conference, whether he intended to stay on as leader and Prime Minister. The answer was yes, not going anywhere. And whether he wanted to govern for the full 4 years until the next actual election date, he also said yes. So, I mean, we could be in a situation where, you know, it's 4 years later. And I mean, I don't think so. But who knows? I mean, technically, it could happen where he could be prime minister for another 4 years. And whether it's 2 years, which is sort of the average, as you said, for a minority government, or whether it's 4 years, that is some time for him to really solidify some of the work that he has started and some of the things that are important to him. I agree with you that reconciliation probably can't be measured in one government cycle. But there are some things there that I think he will want to finish. Drinking water advisories would be the first one that comes to mind because it is close to finished, although delayed. And then I wonder whether he would want to put some things in place that cannot be undone by future governments, whether it be how UNDRIP gets applied to the United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Rights, how that gets applied to Canadian law, or whether it be starting to give back control of child welfare to First Nations in this country. Those are some of the things that are big, long-lasting pieces that I think could continue on if there was not a Liberal government. Mm-hmm. But I also think that climate change is one where they're really going to have to sort of put their money where their mouth is. And I don't mean that technically. They've put a lot of money behind climate change. Right. But I think people need to see some results. They've increased the targets now, as we know. COP26 is around the corner. There's all these different things happening, but I think people will want to see proof that this is working and that there is a real shift of the Canadian economy towards something more innovative and green-based. So those are all things I think that he probably, given what he said to me and to others in the past, cares a lot about and might want to try and show real progress on. But I wonder how that maybe gets in the way or takes precedence over sort of the day-to-day of governing. Right. You know, like, because it's a lot to manage. If you're thinking about those big fixes for Canadian society, whether you agree with them or not, and then how you do things sort of on a regular basis inside a minority government where not everyone agrees with you.
I remember that after the 2019 election, you know, one thing that you and I said is it feels like we're more divided after the election than we were before it, because it was a pretty nasty tone election. And look, we're not any better in 2021. Like, we're pretty divided, too, particularly over issues like, I think, like the vaccine mandate, mm-hmm. which, listen, the division is not so much in the numbers. Like, it's not like a split half or anything,
no.
because so many people are behind these vaccine passports. But it's like the tone of the division is just much more aggressive. And this is the environment under which Trudeau is once again prime minister. He is prime minister over a widening division, or at least a division that is getting sharper in tone. And I wonder if he's also thinking about that in terms of the ways that he's going to govern yeah. and the priorities of this government.
Yeah, I think that's a really smart observation. One of the things that he also said this week was, you know, my cabinet will come soon, but my deputy prime minister is staying where she is, and she's still going to be the finance minister. And I wonder, too, if that's also to sort of signal some continuity at a time when, you're right, those divisions can seem sharp, even if they are not huge masses of people on each side. He also said they're moving forward on the required mandatory vaccines for federal workers, that the requirement to be vaccinated to get on a plane or a train is going to happen quickly, too. So those are all, you know, things, yes, that he talked about during the election campaign that he has a mandate to do. But those are also all those things that could, as you say, sharpen the divide in the country. So how does he overcome that in the face of those potential divisions? And how does he make sure that everybody feels comfortable with the direction he's bringing the country? I think that's that is potentially another real test for him ahead. And we know that he's had plenty of tests that he didn't expect, the pandemic being one of them. But I wonder, I wonder, too, how his tone over the coming weeks and months will sort of set the tone for the rest of the country. And that, my friend, is the sound of cheersing to a good run. You might remember we started this podcast as a one-off in 2019. I barely knew you.
Yes.
We
barely spoke before we started this thing.
We barely speak now. No. we did an audition together, and they said, whoa, that's some chemistry
Magic, yes.
That's some magic. So we were going to do it just for that election, and then it was a minority government. There was a lot happening. The United States went wild, so you did a spinoff. We just kept going.
Yeah.
But things have settled down now, and so apparently we are too. And when the next election rolls around, whether it's in 18, 24 months, or 4 years, as Justin Trudeau suggested, we will be back too. So,
listen,
yeah.
If you go to the legacy section of Sir John Abbott's Wikipedia page, it contains his one famous quote, which is, I hate politics. And that's one I can't relate to because I love politics. And so I think we're going to be back doing this if there's another election, if there's another bat signal in the sky.
That would make me very, very happy. you think I'm joking? That was like a totally sincere sentiment to you.
Yes. I thought it was about elections because that would also make you very happy.
Sure.
You
know all of it. So, all of it.
Yes.
You, elections, all of it. So one more last call for the road. Last week we asked you, are you satisfied with the result of the election?
And as always, we heard from a lot of you. One person said, having an election and ending up almost exactly where we left off must be the most 2020/2021 outcome possible. I hear you. I totally feel you. Another listener tweeted, I was originally perplexed by the decision to call an election, but now feel like we can, without question, say the majority of Canadians want mask and vaccine mandates and move forward with these measures. And one more, we heard from an NDP supporter who wanted to say, we NDPers stick with Jagmeet because he's growing our party. We didn't make the seat gains we wanted, but we lost many ridings by only razor-thin margins. Only major party to increase our voter count. We don't eat our leaders every time we fall a little short.
I feel like that was directed specifically to me.
Yeah, it was.
Listen, we always love hearing from you, from the listeners, and there are still plenty of places to see and hear us. I have a show on Sunday mornings on the TV, in case you didn't know, Rosemary Barton Live on Sundays at 10 Eastern. I'm on The National. I will do At Issue. I will invite El Amin on At Issue. And of course, I'm on Twitter at Rosie Barton.
Yes. And I'm on Twitter always because that's my home address. My home address is at El Amin 88 on Twitter. I also host another podcast for the CBC. It is called Pop Chat. You can find that every Wednesday. It is very little politics. It's mostly about pop culture.
It's good,
but
though. It's good,
like, come through. We have a great time. And also, like, if you're like, man, what I want is so much El Amin in my life.
Yeah.
You can find my book, Son of Elsewhere, available wherever books are sold, next spring from Penguin Random House. So get it.
I love that you plugged that. And now, again, as the story of this podcast has been from the beginning, I feel like I have done nothing with my life compared to you.
Stop this.
I'm 10 years older than you. Anyway, listen, that is it for Party Lines for now, but not forever. From CBC News and CBC Podcasts, I'm Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud, Chief Rosemary Barton fan and waiting for her book, because, God, like, get on it, lady. And culture writer for BuzzFeed News. Do it.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, I'll text you in a minute.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.